Welcome to All Sides with Ann Fisher. The King Lincoln District was once the cultural and commercial heart of Columbus for African Americans. Is it poised for a rebirth, and what might that look like? Coming up later, we're going to talk with Willis Brown. He's president of the Bronzeville Neighborhood Association, which includes the King Lincoln District. And also John Waddy. He's a local attorney and has developed parts of the King Lincoln District. Right now, we have Will Haygood. Will is a staff writer for the Style section of the Washington Post and an author of several best-selling biographies and other works of nonfiction, including Sweet Thunder, The Life and Times of Sugar Ray Robinson, which has just been released in paperback. Will was born in Columbus and moved to the King Lincoln neighborhood in 1968. His memoir, The Haygoods of Columbus, chronicles the urban renewal that changed the landscape of the neighborhood. Will has just been named a 2011 John Simon Guggenheim Fellow, and welcome to the show, Will.
Thank you. Good to be here.
And congratulations.
Thank you very much.
I was wondering if you could set the scene for us and what you remember. I know you're very young, so I don't, but what you remember from 1968 and what, even growing up there, what you would hear about what it used to be like.
Well, my family had moved to the area in 1968 from the North Side, and I knew the King Lincoln Mount Vernon Avenue area growing up through my grandmother. She would call East Side Taxi Cab Company, which was a taxi cab company from the East Side, and they would come and get her and take her to her doctor's office, which was right on Mount Vernon Avenue. And it was a teeming street, a lot of stores, a lot of people, very active. It was unlike anything that I was used to seeing in the city, with the exception of going downtown on North High Street.
Mm-hmm. Was it exciting to go to, or was it a fun thing to do?
Well, yes, and for the simple fact that it was very dressy. My uncles who had, my great uncles who had come from Selma, Alabama, all settled on the east side of the city. They lived on Monroe Avenue, on Long Street, and so we would visit them. And then my mother, of course, moved there with her children in 1968 to the right to the Bolivar Arms housing project, and but then you got to see the neighborhood from the inside out, and it wasn't always as pretty, as lovely as a child might remember it upon first seeing. There were day-to-day challenges. There was urban poverty, but there was also a strong cadre of adults who kept the children in that child's world, and so that was helpful. But on the other hand, there were these wonderful grocery stores like Carl Brown, mm-hmm. like O'Kane's. There was a place. There was no McDonald's then on the east side, at least to my memory, but on Mount Vernon Avenue, right across from the King Arts Complex, there was this hamburger place called Sandy's, and you could go there and get a hamburger for like 15 cents. And for some reason, it was always busy on Mount Vernon Avenue at night, you know, even for us, 14, 15, and 16 years old, it was really fascinating.
Did you like moving there?
Yes, and no, I was nervous. Mm-hmm. Any kid is going to be reticent to leave their childhood friends,
right,
from the North Side. And so I was somewhat nervous. And then there was a reputation that it was aggressive community, energetic, that there would be fights, that you would have to, you know, stand up for who you were, especially if you were coming from another neighborhood all the way across town. And so I got into usual little boy fights, won some and lost some. But it was fascinating to see different characters, because I guess like somebody who would have been moving to Harlem in the 1960s or to South Central L.A. or to Atlanta, there were genuine characters. There were genuine genuine personalities. I mean, it was a community that had East High School. It was a community that had its own newspaper with the Call and Post, which I later, after college, went to work for.
Right.
It was a community who had musicians still living there who had played at the Lincoln Theater or the Pythian Theater or the Cameo Theater. So these people, you would see them walking around, or you would hear them in the doctor's office with your grandmother or the dentist's office or wherever. So there was that tradition of oral history always floating up and down the street or at the hair salon or the barbershop. So you heard this intoxicating brew of a urban community that was quite alive.
My guest is Will Haygood. We're talking about the King Lincoln District, and it is the subject of a new documentary at WOSU, Neighborhoods documentary series. If you want to see that, it's on tonight. It's airing tonight at 9 p.m. on WOSU-TV. You can go to the WOSU.org website and learn more about that. If you want to give us a call, speak with Will Haygood, 614-292-8513. Will is a Washington Post staff writer. He's also a Columbus native. He's written about his life in Columbus, the Haygoods of Columbus. We're talking about a little bit about the past of the King Lincoln District, and we're going to be looking forward to the future with some other guests coming up. You write about the Carl Brown's Market and the Singletary Market. There's a touching part of the documentary about Carl Brown during the unrest in the 60s and how he tried to protect other businesses in the area that weren't African-American owned and operated.
Yes, it was very large-hearted of him, very forward-thinking of him. Marvin Bonowitz had a legendary grocery, a legendary haberdashery shop that sold men's suits. I couldn't always afford to go there and buy a suit at Vernon Taylor's, but I went there when I could, when my grandmother handed me enough money or lease, which was right across the street, too. And during the riots, I think Carl Brown knew that something in urban America was snapping apart, and it was decades of built-up frustration from segregation and all the ills heaped upon black folk. And it came raining down right in the city on the east side, just like it did in Newark, in L.A., in Philadelphia. And so there you had all of a sudden in a city, you know, that a lot of outsiders thought was just another quiet Midwestern city that was suddenly experiencing the spasms of riots. You had a great deal of African-American students at Ohio State who suddenly were inspired with all of this activism, student activism in the marches down south, who came out to Mount Vernon Avenue with their signs and with their marching and stood in front of the tanks. There were National Guard tanks right on Mount Vernon Avenue. I was a young kid, and it was a frightening thing to see because you knew as a kid that you could be arrested or you could be harmed, you know, with the military police. It was scary.
And Carl Brown stood in front of that store, but he suffered others' changes himself as a businessman. You wrote about that in your book and how there was a lot of effort and a lot of money dumped into the Singletary grocery store.
Yes, it was. It was an amazing story in a way. It was President Carter who came to Mount Vernon Avenue with a big urban empowerment zone block, and there was a big event on Mount Vernon Avenue, and one of the signature architectural buildings was Singletary's Market. It was fancy. It was new. Had a lot of fancy goods. And Singletary's down the street was what you might call old school. You know, he still got in the truck, or he had a couple of drivers sometimes. They would go down to South Carolina, and they would get the sweet potatoes in the corn on the cob, and they would drive through the night and have it back up at the store. But Singletary's had delicacies, had lobster, had all kinds of fish and meat. It was a lot for that community, and it was a lot very fast. As Singletary's went down, Mr. Brown stayed steady. Singletary's Market didn't survive more than 2 years for a lot of reasons, business reasons that I explain in the book.
The arts flourished there. Do you remember that as a child? Music?
Yes. Not as much as I would in later years, because as a kid, I was into sports mostly. But there never was a lack of, you know, a singing group, a jazz combo, friends. There was a lot of singing outside underneath street lamps in those days. It was as if people created their own American Idol right outside. With the recreation centers, Beatty Recreation Center, you always had arts activities going on there. But the Lincoln was shuttered, and there was no King Arts Complex at all. And so what formal art you had seemed to flow out of the recreation centers, which is why the Lincoln Theater reopening and the flourishing of the King Arts Complex is so important and so very, very crucial to the neighborhood now.
We have to take a break. When we return, Will Haygood will return with us, and also we'll be hearing from Willis Brown, president of the Bronzeville Neighborhood Association, which includes the Lincoln, King Lincoln District. We're talking about the King Lincoln District this hour, and if you have a question or comment, please give us a call, 614-292-8513, or you can email us at allsides@wosu.org. Columbus Neighborhood's King Lincoln is the newest documentary by WOSU Public Media. Watch it tonight at 9 p.m. on WOSU TV. We'll be right back. This is All Sides on 89.7 NPR News.
This is 89.7 NPR News. At 2 o'clock, Talk of the Nation begins. Every now and again, we look down at that cell phone and wonder if it's making tumors bloom in our head. So far, not a single trial has found solid proof, but each trial conducted so far has been riddled with problems. The search for the test to establish or disprove links between cell phone use and brain cancer. That discussion on Talk of the Nation at 2 on 89.7 NPR News.
Support for WOSU 89.7 comes from the Women's Fund of Central Ohio, presenting Goldie Hawn for the 2011 Keyholder event on May 11th at the Ohio Theater. Tickets and more information online at womensfundcentralohio.org.
And it's 50 degrees in downtown Columbus. Showers and thunderstorms off and on throughout the day. Some of those storms could be severe. A high today of 65 degrees. The rain continues tonight and a low of 61. And All Sides continues on 89.7 NPR News.
Welcome back to All Sides. My guests, Will Haygood, Washington Post staff writer and author. We're talking about the King Lincoln District in Columbus, and Will's written a memoir called The Haygoods of Columbus. We were just talking a little bit about that. Joining us now is Willis Brown. He's the president of the Bronzeville Neighborhood Association, which includes the King Lincoln District. Willis has lived in the neighborhood since 1987 and is also a member of the Long Street Businessmen's Association. Welcome to the show, Willis.
Yes, thank you for having me. I appreciate being here and being in this midst of good stuff.
We were talking a little bit about the history of the King Lincoln District as Will Haygood knew it, moving there in 1968 and visiting there before that with his grandmother when she would go there for doctor's appointments and that sort of thing. Of course, it goes way back beyond that, and there's a lot more than the great art and music that of the King Lincoln District in Bronzeville. It also had its own mayor and cabinet during the Depression. Why was that, Willis?
Oh, you know, the history of Bronzeville is so rich, and it's almost like an oasis in Columbus. And and the reason for that is that African Americans moving up since after Reconstruction settled in Columbus, and it gave opportunities for education as well as work. And from the early 1900s, the emphasis was to improve, to better themselves. So from the late 1890s to the early 1930s, you had OSU graduating one or two doctors a year, and most of them had their business and residence in our Bronzeville neighborhood.
Mm-hmm.
And with that, they invested in the neighborhood. And not only did they invest in it, they were part of it. So you had money being circulated within the community.
Right.
And they wanted to improve that. So they started to not only build buildings, but also to invest in people and the politics to control their development.
So what changed, Will? What started to turn things around?
Okay, it was in the 20s and the 30s. I call it the golden era of Bronzeville. And just to give an idea of the boundaries of what Bronzeville was back then and what it is today, it went from downtown, say, about 4th Street, and then it went all the way to Woodland, and Broad Street was the south boundary, and the Pennsylvania Railroad was the north. And that was about 2 square miles. Today we only have about 1 square mile. And what changed things was that there was a lot going on, and the people wanted to facilitate the direction. And then they decided to turn Bronzeville for the reason it was created by a gentleman up in Chicago, Mr. James Gentry. Mm-hmm. And the reason why he created that, because during that time there was a schism or a struggle with African Americans because of color, light skin versus dark skin. And what he wanted to do in Chicago was to minimize that so they can work together to improve economically. And and his reason was that the metal bronze is a mixture of other metals to make it up. So therefore, we, no matter what shade we are, we need to work together to move forward. So the first Bronzeville was that in Chicago in 1930, and then it moved to Milwaukee, and then Columbus in 1937, where they incorporated. And then later on in the 40s, it was a Bronzeville in L.A. So and so because prior to that, it was the neighborhood was given. It was the black neighborhood, the colored neighborhood.
Mm-hmm.
It had other terms that just wasn't fitting. So this caught a hold as to identify and predominantly African-American neighborhood. And with that, giving it the foundation, then they start pooling themselves together and say, in order for us to control this, we must have a government to address the social and political and economic development. And that's when they formed to have their first election in 1937, and which they then mimicked the downtown cabinet with 8 cabinet members and the mayor. And the first mayor was Reverend Scarborough.
Mm-hmm.
And well, with that, they did on certain things.
It sounds very cohesive. Will Haygood, what started to change and break apart this cohesiveness?
One must be realistic. The romanticized version of a Bronzeville never really carried any weight outside of the East Side. It just factually did not.
Mm-hmm.
The civil rights movement played a huge part. The construction of the freeway, which cut off some traffic to the East Side. There was a notorious police incident at the Tahiki restaurant in the city during the 60s. And as much as anything, that was almost the flowering of irreversible black activism in the city. There was a cadre of white police officers who went in to the restaurant and attacked some black diners. You had elderly people, African-American, all from all over the city, as well as some liberal, well-meaning whites who joined in. They created civic associations, and they began putting demands on the police department to be more just. There were lawsuits filed. The U.S. Civil Rights Commission got involved, and the community just wasn't going to sit back and take official injustice as it saw. All too common.
And to really pinpoint how Bronzeville began to dissipate was that it was 3 major events in America's history that facilitated that. The first one was Brown versus the Board of Education in 1954. And when that happened, it started to desegregate community. People could say, well, we are going to now desegregate the schools, we're going to move out. During that time, African Americans started to move their resources out of the community. And because now they desegregation, everyone wanted to move their money somewhere else. Even though they lived there, they started shopping other places. Then the second came, what Mr. Haygood just mentioned, is that of the highways. Then that came in the late 50s. And with the 71 and 70, you physically cut the community from downtown.
Mm-hmm.
And it was still able to survive because at that time it had about 70,000 people living there. Today we have about maybe 9 or 10. But what happened, what was the coup de grace that really sunk the neighborhood was urban renewal. Because when the money from the federal government came, was available, the communities came together and said, well, what can we do? The same federal dollars that created Victorian Village, which at the time was called Denison Conservation District. They kept their homes and rehabbed them, and we have Victorian Village today. In our area from early 60s, that money was used to tear down our community. And right on Mount Vernon, north of Mount Vernon, they tore down, thousands of homes and left it undeveloped for about 10 years. So well, it just really devastated the community and reconfigured the whole movement of people in the community.
My guests are Will Haygood, a Washington Post staff writer and author and Columbus native, and also Willis Brown. He's president of Brownsville Neighborhood Association. If you have a question or comment for them, give us a call, 614-292-8513. And Phil from Columbus, you're on the air. Welcome to the show.
Thank you. Mm-hmm. I have a question about a building at the corner of Mount Vernon Avenue and Taylor Avenue. It's a large, splendid, three-story structure. I've talked to a lot of older people in the area, and some of them remember it being a drugstore, but it obviously wasn't built for that. I wonder if you can shed any light on the history of this building. And I'll take my answer off there. Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you, Phil.
Yes, it was a multi-use building. It used to be in the past. From what I've heard, they used to have a soda shop in there. It was also where they had dances. It was a multi-function building. And today it's just there. The owners, I think, live in Florida. And it's a beautiful building. But it had many uses over the time for entertainment, retail, and so forth.
Will Haygood, when you return, is there much you recognize about King Lincoln anymore?
I used to be a foreign correspondent when I was at the Boston Globe.
Right.
And whenever I would emerge from a war zone, my mother would want to see me. So I would rest up for a couple of days and then fly home. And the first thing I would do, I would rent a car at the airport and drive down Mount Vernon Avenue and Long Street. And it would break my heart when there was one less dry cleaners there. George Pierce's shop was gone. Waldo Tyler's drugstore was gone. This establishment was gone. Lee's style shop was boarded up. And so that made me sad, and I wondered what would happen to the community. Things do change. And there was this great movement to the suburbs, as we all know. But I think that now there's great vigor, or at least great vigor in terms of the arts in the community, and culture and arts have always been the cornerstone to our civilization. And so I'm ecstatic about the beautiful Beaux Arts Lincoln Theater, as well as the impressive King Arts Center. And so things like that, I think, are going to, or have been, reviving the neighborhood. And it's a wonderful thing to see the vision of the mayor come alive, Mayor Coleman, and others who have been quite helpful to him, like Larry James. Those are impressive monuments in the city that stand up against any art structure from here to Sarasota, mm-hmm. Florida, to Los Angeles, California.
Willis Brown, what are the challenges that still face the King Lincoln District at this point, in your opinion?
And the challenges is just that. I mean, yes, the Lincoln Theater was renovated with tax dollars, and also the King Arts Complex, serves a function. But people are moving out of our community to the tune of almost 800 people per year. We lost half our population. So, yes, it's coming back, but not for us that live there.
Mm-hmm.
And that's the issue. The population, people see the icing, but the cake is the Brownsville history. And people keep saying, why are you making that a big issue? Well, it is a big issue because the King Lincoln District was just created in 2003 with the mayor, using the old history of Bronzeville, because in the 1920s, 30s, 40s, and 50s, there was no King Lincoln District.
So what do you think we'll achieve? Where do you see the district, Bronzeville, okay, King Lincoln, in 10 years, for instance? And what do you think the hurdles are to achieve that?
I think the hurdles is that we have to have a holistic approach. Having the King Lincoln District as an economic engine is great, and we are supporting development, but we must come in and do the basic things, such as, you know, the infrastructure. We have beautiful brick streets up under the blacktop. Expose those. Put pedestrian lighting. Begin to promote the community. We have 100-year-old homes that people would love to come back. We need to build the caliber of education in our neighborhood schools. So we need to give reason for someone to come back, not just come and have a good time and go home. What is going to encourage them to live there? Because we are moving families out, and people that are coming in are not coming in with families because of the condition of our schools. Mm-hmm. We recently saw a newspaper article that we have Champion Middle School that has the lowest test scores in not only Columbus but in the state. And so what family is going to come there with middle school age children and put their children in that school? So we have to address the holistic approach to economic revitalization in urban communities. It's not just doing the bricks and mortar, but how are we addressing the livelihood? What are we putting in place to move people to another level, to be more of a greater asset to Columbus and the city as it develops? And that's the part I think is missing, because everyone is caught up in the bricks and mortar and not the substance, which the substance is the resident and the assets of its location to downtown and to the freeway.
We have a comment from Michael on Facebook. We're asking people, where do they see the neighborhood in 10 years and if they have any predictions for the future? And Michael says, I had a chance to work in the heart of King Lincoln area for 2 years, and I think it has huge potential. The homes will slowly be restored. They are custom colonial. More shops, cafes, and affordable condo apartments will be added. With Columbus State and the Columbus College of Art and Design, a quick walk to King Lincoln, this could be the next high street and campus area if the money powers believe in it enough. Do you disagree with that, Willis? That and Will Haygood as well. It does have a great location. I mean, why you seem a little
The location is going to sell itself,
right?
And eventually, it's going to have all of that. The question is, who will be living there? And that's the issue. Yes, it can be for anyone, and we want a mixed environment, and we want it to do well. But if we don't take care the schools, if we don't emphasize those, you will not have families living in our neighborhood. People are going to come and buy the beautiful home because it's a part of America's architecture. And we have the location where we have the logistics and the access of downtown. So it's going to be the coffee shop. All that's going to come. But we are saying, let's not negate the heritage and the history of it. Let's incorporate that into it, and let's not just focus on just the King Lincoln District. And that's been always my fuss with the mayor, is that everyone is promoting King Lincoln District without promoting the neighborhood. Now, when we talk about the documentaries coming, it states King Lincoln Neighborhood. That, and then using the history of Bronzeville, the King Lincoln District only came about in 2003 with the mayor.
Okay.
So we have to stress the whole neighborhood that has the King Lincoln District. It has Novo. It has Elijah Pierce Housing.
Right.
It has Capitol View. It has a collage of different enclaves that make it rich.
Well, Haygood, any thoughts about the future of the district?
Well, there are urban homesteaders moving into the area now, as we speak, who have been moving into the area and buying houses. Real estate is a key. You look at Harlem now in the 70s and 80s, people were fleeing Harlem, and now it's hard to get a lovely brownstone in Harlem because they're so prized and so valued. I think that there are many magnets on the east side in the King Lincoln area now, and with the improvement of schools that will, I think, attract families who might be thinking about moving to, you know, way out to Pickerington, mm-hmm. or wherever. You know, there's a lot to be said about being in the city, downtown, you know, near a vibrant cultural life. And, you know, it is heartening and wonderful to see that the movement is underway. I do not lament that the artistic magnets are what's getting attention now, mm-hmm. because 15 years ago, or maybe 25 years ago, let me say, nobody had envisioned these things on any scale for the district. And you know, I think that the mayor has really done some remarkable, amazing things that will serve the legacy of the city quite well.
Well, we have to end it there with Willis Brown, president of the Brownsville Neighborhood Association. Willis, thanks for joining us today. And also Will Haygood, Washington Post staff writer and author, including of The Haygoods of Columbus. Will, thanks for joining us again.
Thank you very much.
When we return, we will welcome John Waddy, attorney and also a lifelong resident of Columbus and has lived in the King Lincoln District since 1990. So stay with us. We'll be right back. This is All Sides on 89.7 NPR News. Plastic is everywhere. When plastics came bursting onto the scene, the presumption was that these were inert materials. And what we're finding is that they may actually be much more biologically active than we ever imagined. On the next Fresh Air, the benefits and hazards of plastic, we talk with Susan Frankel, author of Plastics, A Toxic Love Story. Join us.
And Fresh Air begins in just about 20 minutes, starting at noon, here on 89.7 NPR News. And it's the Chefs in the City Baker's Dozen. You can bid now on 13 of the most sought-after Chefs in the City silent auction packages, even if you don't have a ticket to the event. Visit WOSU.org/chefs to view all 13 items up for bid, like our featured package, the Napa Valley Wine Country Experience. But hurry, bidding closes at 4 p.m. on April 21st. Visit WOSU.org/chefs.
Support for 89.7 comes from the McCoy Center for the Arts, presenting the lecture Understanding the Speech That Transformed a Nation with Martin Luther King Jr. speechwriter Clarence Jones, Wednesday, April 20th at 7 p.m. Details at McCoyCenter.org.
And it's 50 degrees in downtown Columbus with a chance of showers and thunderstorms off and on throughout the day, a high of 65. Showers and thunderstorms tonight as well. Some storms could be severe and a low of 61. All Sides with Ann Fisher continues on 89.7 NPR News.
Welcome back to All Sides. We're talking about the King Lincoln District. Columbus Neighborhood's King Lincoln is the newest documentary by WOSU Public Media. You can watch it tonight at 9 p.m. on WOSU TV. Joining us now is John Waddy Jr. He is an attorney. He is a lifelong resident of Columbus and has lived in the King Lincoln District since 1990. He assisted the development of the Hamilton Park Place condominiums by the Phoenix Group. Welcome to the show, John.
Good afternoon. Thank you for having me.
If you'd like to join the conversation, give us a call, 614-292-8513, or you can email us at allsides@wosu.org. And John, from Columbus, you're on the air. Welcome to the show.
Hi. Thanks, Ann. I'm a Columbus City school teacher at Fort Hays High School, mm-hmm. and we have conducted an extensive research project along with a lot of the middle schools in the neighborhood, like Champion and like Monroe. And we have brought in a jazz composer with the jazz arts group, Wycliffe Gordon, that's doing a jazz composition piece about the neighborhood. And next year, our high school will be doing a service learning project in the neighborhood. So I think this is a great opportunity to promote the neighborhood. And also, I know Willis and Dana from Clabna, and they're great guys, but I think a lot of Columbus City schools get bad press, and I think there are great Columbus City schools, and I don't think we hear about those often enough.
All right. John, thanks for your call.
No problem. Thank you.
And good luck with those projects. Those sound interesting. John Waddy, what is your impression of that, of the alchemy of the district making a comeback and how it works with the local businesses, the local arts, and the schools that Willis Brown brought up?
Well, I think the district is on its way back, and I don't disagree with Mr. Brown or anyone else that the district is just the name. We're talking about the Near East Side, and it includes a lot of parts of the Near East Side. So we use King Lincoln District as a title because the mayor has chosen that title, and it's the brand for the area, but it's much larger. And because it's much larger, there are a lot of other things in the district. I think the district is on its way back. It's a slow, slow process, and it is has to be a global approach. We need the schools to be part of it. We need the neighborhood to be part of it. We need the commercial end of the area to be part of it.
You've said, I think, that the mindset for many years has been leaving the black neighborhood had meant that you made it, that you were successful. And I'm wondering if that attitude is changing and how important it is to the neighborhood to have African-Americans as well as any other stripe move there.
Well, I think that mindset was much more part of the media and the way the media portrayed the east side of Columbus.
Okay.
And I don't think it was something that we embraced so much as part of our culture. But it's certainly true that there was other housing, other amenities in other parts of the city of Columbus that people aspired toward, and they left our area for those amenities.
Give us a call, 614-292-8513. My guest is John Waddy, local attorney and developer. Mark from Columbus, you're on the air. Welcome to the show.
Thank you, Ann. Mm-hmm. I've got a question for John, and I also would have had a question for Willis, but perhaps maybe on another occasion he might be able to comment,
okay.
Which would have been actually the Bronzeville Association has had a historical role both nationally and internationally, and they were one of the primary legal persons filing, challenging the legality of the 2004 election, re-election of Mr. Bush. But for John, my main question was, if my memory serves me correct, until relatively recently, perhaps in the 1990s, there were little pockets either in the King Lincoln Bronzeville District or maybe just on the north edge near Taylor Avenue that were actually still considered townships and not within the city, and they did not get full city services, water, sewer, fire, so on and so forth. And I think it's only been in the last decade or two that some of those little enclaves or pockets have been pulled in and given full services. And I didn't know if he had any idea of the ideas of little pockets either in or near his district mm-hmm. or neighborhood that didn't get the full city services that they really needed.
You're talking about American Edition primarily, where that's on the other side of Fifth Avenue, which is still considered Near East Side from my point of view. That's one area that did not have all the city services. Now it's a primary focus of Homeport and a couple other entities where they're building houses over there and doing some things. But that really was on the outskirts. You're correct.
Thanks a lot, Mark, for that call. Marilyn in Columbus, welcome to the show.
Hello.
Hello, Marilyn.
Yes. I was listening. I kind of tuned in mid of the information that was being given by Willis and Will Haygood.
Mm-hmm.
And I grew up in Poindexter Village, which is on Champion Avenue, right across from Union Grove Baptist Church there. As a matter of fact, our family was the third family to move in on Champion when it was built. And when Poindexter Village was built and President Roosevelt came, I remember seeing him when they came to dedicate that area.
When President Roosevelt?
Yes. Yes. And I just wanted to let them know, because they seem to be a lot younger than me, of the people that came out of that area, just on Champion Avenue alone.
Mm-hmm.
There was Greg Morris, played Barney on Mission Impossible. There was Earl Sherrard, who was Dr. Earl Sherrard, who was a Tuskegee Airman and became mm-hmm. On the staff at Children's Hospital. There was John Foster and Newton Foster. They were twins who both their mother and put them through school. She was a day worker. And they became engineers, civil engineers. And John had his own business here in Columbus. He's deceased now. But he had a business there for quite a number of years. He employed me for like about 13 years. Mm-hmm. And he had civil, sanitary, and architectural. And his brother, Newton, retired from Wright-Patterson Air Force Base as the Deputy Director of Technical Operations.
So
this is all on Champion Avenue.
So this is people flourished there?
Yes. Yes, we had a number of business people. There was Amina Robinson, and another. She's a famous artist.
Fabulous artist, right?
Right.
Marilyn,
and those were Poindexter people.
Marilyn, can I ask you, what do you think a rebirth of the area looks like now?
I like the rebirth. The condos going in are nice, but they're not handicap accessible, because I have problems with my handicap with my legs and everything. And I was saying, we're talking to some of our East High School graduates. We mm-hmm. have our reunion committee class of 50 through 55, and we grew up there during all this period of time that they're talking about,
mm-hmm.
and we're still very active. And so our reunions, we have, you know, three, mm-hmm. four,
East High School
people.
Reunions are
right.
Well known.
And we're proud of that area and proud of where we grew up.
Mm-hmm.
And we were the consumers during those years where they're talking about the Pierce photography. And there was a Kroger store there.
Right.
I used to work at the Cameo Theater.
Well, let me ask John Waddy, what does the district need now? What's missing besides the people? You always want more people, but what does it need? And thank you, Marilyn, for that call.
I think Marilyn touched upon what was is what we need. The mere fact that we don't have a grocery store is extremely important. We don't even have a laundromat. It's the basic things that people need where they don't have to get in their car and leave the area for those goods and those services. We need a rebirth of the area of the basic things.
You know, they talk about that in a lot of the districts when they talk about downtown, you know, the center, the very center of the city, that there's a certain balance that you're looking for, and how many people, you have to have a certain number of people living there before you can make the investments for those kinds of things like laundromats and grocery stores and that kind of a thing.
I disagree with that.
Okay.
I think that if the mayor's office and if the community and if the commercial side of Columbus got together and said, look, here's a community that has been depressed for many years. The basic things that they need aren't available. A Kroger's can come in with a different model of a store and put an express store in there that would give us fresh eggs, fresh bread, all the basic things we need that a store would give us. It doesn't have to be a superstore. And they could do that if we all came together and came to that conclusion.
Reginald, you live in the King Lincoln District. Welcome to the show.
Well, good morning, and thank you. 2 points. One, I think the mayor has done a good job with the King District. But we got to remember, just like the lady was saying before, that there were forerunners. And I think particularly about Jerry Hammond, who really came up with that idea of refurbishing that school, Garfield School, so it could be on the King Center. And secondly, we're talking about people moving back in. I lived on the Near East Side since I came to Columbus in 1973. I lived on Sherman Avenue,
mm-hmm.
and I lived on Greenway. And when I had to move out of Greenway, I looked around the city and said, where do I want to live? I bought a new house built a new house on Taylor Avenue, still living in the black community. And I look at my neighbors, they're raising their children there, and I see other people coming back into this community. So I think the dream is still alive, and that's all I wanted to say.
Thank you, Reginald. Mm-hmm. We have a message from Jesse on Facebook, writes, I live on the Near East Side, but I live by Children's Hospital, and they have played a big part in the revitalization of my neighborhood. Does the King Lincoln District have any plans on how they can attract more businesses to come there? So, John Waddy, you were saying you got to get together and work together to do stuff like that.
And the plan has to be global. Again, it has to be a concerted effort of everyone. I think that some of the new businesses, you have the Urban Spirit, you have the Creole restaurant on Mount Vernon Avenue, which I believe has been the biggest draw in our community as far as restaurants are concerned. They serve good food. They bring the hospitality that is what we want in the community. Mm-hmm. All races come to that restaurant. I think that you have to open the doors to the whole community and say, look, here's all this open space. Let's come in and build something. But it has to fit the community. Mega buildings, mega everything won't fit the community. This is a neighborhood. You have to bring in what was there. And I believe that the mom and pop operations are still vital. I mean, the President of the United States, Congress has said, we're trying to reach out and get mom-and-pop stores to come back in these communities. That's the lifeblood of the community.
You can see it when it comes to an arts district like the Short North, for instance, and in coffee shops and that kind of thing. But mom-and-pop dry cleaners, mom-and-pop hardware stores, those just don't exist anymore.
Well, they do exist, and they still exist in our community. It depends on the model that you use. You have Phillips Pharmacy. That's an excellent pharmacy on Mount Vernon Avenue. You have mm-hmm. Edwards Drugs. You have that on Mount Vernon Avenue. We have these kinds of things, and it's just, what do we need? And what we need is more of that, because we're never going to be able to support a franchise. You know, Chipotle's is not going to come to our community. We need mom and pops. We need the lifeblood of our community, and that's what it was.
There's a segment in the documentary about developing on the development of One Street with city funds and including the green building and that sort of thing. How is the housing stock, and is it enough at this point?
I think the housing stock is excellent in our community. It's all right to do new builds. 21st is an excellent example of new builds.
21st Street, right.
For 21st Street, and it's great. But there are other streets where houses are boarded up and vacant. If we targeted those streets and said, let's go back and revitalize those, put some incentives in the community, take Garfield Avenue on the other side of Mount Vernon. If you go down that street, you will count probably at least 30 to 40 homes that are boarded up. Why not go over there and use some kind of city funds and bring people in to redo those homes and get those back online? That's part of building the community. It's the same thing we did on 21st. Let's pick a street, let's target it, and let's redo it.
Well, I want to thank you, John Waddy, for joining us today. I appreciate it.
Thank you.
John Waddy is an attorney with his own law firm. He's a lifelong resident of Columbus and has lived in the King Lincoln District since 1990. He has helped with the development of the Hamilton Park Place condominiums by the Phoenix Group. Also, thanks to Willis Brown and Will Haygood, who joined us earlier. We're talking about the King Lincoln District today. Columbus Neighborhoods King Lincoln is the newest documentary by WOSU Public Media. You can watch it tonight at 9 p.m. on WOSU-TV. Thanks for listening to All Sides. This is WOSU 89.7 and WOSU HD1 and WOSU 820 Columbus and streaming online at WOSU.org. 89.7 NPR News, a service of WOSU Public Media.
Support for 89.7 NPR News comes from Home Instead Senior Care, helping families eliminate worry, reduce stress, and reestablish personal freedom. More at 1-800-4-SENIORS. Home Instead. To us, it's personal.